Hi, this is Mary H.K. Choi, and this is Hey Cool Life, a micropod about mental health and creativity. It is April 22nd, 2023. This is episode 155. This week has been absolutely gruesome, but for like a number of like different reasons. And I've been thinking a lot about just conversation and where certain stories can live and where certain opinions can live. And, you know, I think that last week I talked about that show Beef and its impact on me, and then the conversation surrounding it in over the past week has been this other conversation. And, you know, there's a part of me that just so wishes there was a place for that other conversation to really live, that isn't like Twitter, that isn't like just these short places where, you know, like the reactiveness and the sort of like shortness and the sort of propulsiveness of it all, makes the actual like conversation difficult to have. And that conversation is just so critical. And as someone who really, like, who is a survivor of sexual assault and trauma, like, and is also a journalist and is also like a storyteller, I just really wish there was a place where this conversation could happen. And I say that, you know, in the face of a lot of like factors that I've been thinking about this week and that everybody's been thinking about this week, and everybody's sort of been feeling the reverberations of like where conversations can happen, and like BuzzFeed closing has sparked a lot of dialogue around like, you know, where can this kind of essay live, or like where can this kind of investigative reporting live, or like, and similarly, like Twitter having, you know, just this event this week of like, you know, taking away a lot of people's verified accounts, the blue check, and privileging other sorts of people, with that recognition becoming a conversation about like the politics of a platform like that. And it's been really making me nostalgic for like what Twitter was really great for. Twitter is the place where if there's a weird smell on like 11th Avenue, you can be like, what's that smell? And then someone else will be like, oh, there's like a tire fire in Jersey or whatever, or like that mysterious like maple syrup smell. Twitter is great for that. And it really felt like, you know, just a little like mini newsletter that didn't have to go into your inbox. And, you know, I don't need to like wax nostalgic about Twitter, but I do think that that change being so felt and like more people leaving for very obvious reasons and, you know, for reasons of violence and safety and protecting certain people and their rights and, you know, like dead naming trans people and all of this stuff. And I also did a panel this week in support of a documentary on Judy Blume and her. I mean, she is like absolutely an icon to me. Like I love her so, so much, and I love her books, and they really, really saved me in a time where I was disassociating really hard, and specifically disappearing into books. And, you know, they were such a salve and such a boon. And so when it was time to like do this documentary, I was really, really thrilled to be included. And the sort of like sad part of that is that her books, which cover everything from like masturbation to puberty to getting your period to like sex without some like horrible, intense, like moralizing ending, you know, all of them are reliably banned a lot. And so I was on a panel for the ACLU with two other authors with banned books, and my books are banned, and like it's such a strange feeling. And it sort of calls to mind this thing that I began with of the stoppage of like conversation or further conversation or conversations around things. And, you know, I never thought I'd be on this. I never thought I would like basically start saying like cancel culture with like such a hard consonant, or say it with like italics or whatever. But I think I'm sitting here and being like, I mean, this isn't even like a solution or even a suggestion of like how to like exercise any kind of change. But yeah, that's all felt really heavy. And I've also been thinking about how, you know, I've talked about the writer's strike, and that's happening on May 1st. And, you know, everyone in the writer's union, it's like the vernacular is like, it's pencils down. And what that means is that nobody's writing anymore. Like, we're not writing. And that's what the walkout is. That's what a strike is. And again, I am not saying that like I side with the studios. This is not what I'm saying. I voted yes. I'm very much a proud member of my union. I've talked about that before. I cannot even get into how grateful I am about my health insurance and the fact that my partner can be on this health insurance. But I'm like, I've just never been in the position where I'm being asked to stop writing in order to, you know, exercise this greater good. And I have so much stress and scarcity and worry and anxiety around the practice of writing itself. And so the fact that I can't do it is just this interesting phenomenon that I have a lot of trepidation about. And it's sort of showing up in my body in interesting ways, like, you know, like stalking Marnie shoes online or whatever, and or like grazing and like eating a little bit, like just eating candy actually, like in these little pockets of time, and chewing gum again and things like that. And so clearly I'm like really anxious. And but the thing, oh God, I don't even know if I'm threading the needle here, but like the thing that I've also been sort of thinking about, especially with, also by the way, I'm sober, like I'm not even high, but you know, this conversation around AI and ChatGPT and like all this stuff. And I start rolling my eyes in the same way that, like, you know, like how I used to feel when people wanted to talk about, like, I don't know why I was about to say Dogecoin, but you see what I'm saying? Like Bitcoin or like any of that stuff. But the thing is, it's like, it's all about how close to the real thing a simulacrum can be. And it's all about sort of moving not only the sort of sense of uncanny valley or manipulating it, or maybe even like closing that schism, right? Like uncanny valley is basically like, you know, it's me cringing at the dancing robot because it looks really creepy, right? Like because it posits to emulate a human, but there's still such a disconnect that like me as a human allegedly can be grossed out. So, and that's sort of like moving, it's moving, like all of these like AI technologies are getting better at simulating us and doing all these things. And, you know, depending on the day, actually, like I'm actually super not fucking worried about it. And it's not, like, I definitely have, like, anger about it. So clearly I am worried because it is definitely, like, a defense mechanism or, like, an indicator of fear. But, like, I've been watching movies, and I've been watching specifically the work of Joanna Hogg, a director, a writer-director, who I think a lot of people might know, like Souvenir 1 and 2. It's like Tilda Swinton's in it, and her daughter Honor Swinton Byrne is in it, and it's, you know, Martin Scorsese produced, and it's you know, it's funny actually, because the first time I watched the first one, The Souvenir, I walked out of the theater, I watched it at Metrograph, and I just was not in the fucking mood, and I was actually super triggered by the male character in that, and I just couldn't do it, and I was just like, fuck, I can't do this. And then slowly I started watching other movies of hers, like Archipelago and The Exhibition, and then I rewatched Souvenir, and then I watched her newest movie, which is called Eternal Daughter. And all of these could be The Eternal Daughter or Eternal Daughter, I'm not actually sure. And then her first movie, Unrelated. And I'm fascinated by the fact that, like, first of all, Tilda Swinton's in a lot of them. Tom Hiddleston is in, like, since her first movie, like, in pretty much everyone except for Eternal Daughter, I believe. And actually, I've not seen Souvenir 2. But I say this to say that I was just so captivated by the way, like, first of all, her camera work is just, like, unbelievable. It's incredibly painterly. It's incredibly close. It's, like, just really, really, like, dynamic and, like, so specific. And even the fact that she's in her 60s, I believe, and hasn't directed that many films in and of itself is just, like, so inspiring in a way. Like, because to me, it sort of, I don't know, it creates a romanticism, I guess, in me when I'm just like, oh, wow, like, she's so precise and she spent all this time honing her voice, blah, blah, blah. But I learned that she doesn't write dialogue in her scripts. And it's, you know, there's a lot of directors who do this, you know, even anecdotally. Like, I was, like, listening to a podcast with Jake Gyllenhaal, who was talking about Guy Ritchie's latest movie, The Covenant, which is about, like, translators. And that script is, like, 50 pages because, like, I don't know, British directors are amazing. But, like, Joanna Hogg specifically, like, sort of, like, talks to the actors. And she tends to work with, like, the same people over and over again. And just sort of figures out what they would say to each other. And so they shoot very long, and they shoot, like, improv, basically, and sort of, like, hone it and polish it, like, basically while they're shooting, or, like, when they're, like, in situ, or, like, they're, like, on location and doing it. And I was just, like, thinking about I was thinking about how that's the thing that, like, all of these, like, simulations will never be able to do. And that's, like, this, like, really pure thing where even in the loneliness of writing, as I'm doing all the time, it's, like, you're still, like, doing this, like, weird thing, at least I do, where, like, I'm writing. And then when I read, it's sort of, like, I'm, like, sitting in an audience. And that sort of, like, creates almost, like, this, like, performative aspect to when I'm, like, sitting back down to write again. Just the fact that I've, like, touched the other side and seen myself from the other side. And, like, that, too, is the creation of a schism. And that, too, sort of, like, compels me to almost create from, not quite uncanny valley, but, like, distorted. And so I'm here to say it is the end of the written word. No, I mean, it's just, there's something happening here. And I think that someone smarter than me can maybe, like, crystallize it or distill it or something. But ultimately, I think this gives me a tremendous amount of hope. Like, I have hope that even as these platforms die because of, like, business decisions or, like, late stage capitalism or, like, white guys or, like, whatever that actually is. And I think that the way certain conversations, I think that the way we read and receive news really limits other conversations that I wish would exist. And then the magic of what happens when people get together with pure curiosity and with an idea of character, but just like so much room for nuance and mutuality. And just like, you know, I'm like increasingly wondering if I can even write a book without having two people sit in a room and act it out. And I say that not to say like, it's because I'm an auteur now. It's not what it is. It's that there is something very broken about my brain. Actually, that's horrible language. There is something changing about my brain to think about story as visual image. And then beyond that, think about story as two people informing and reacting to each other. And so my book is gonna be really, really late still. No, just all of these things. And I'm really grateful to be learning. I'm really grateful to offer care and space for even private channel conversations in this moment. And I am really hopeful and have a lot of faith in all of us being able to overcome the sort of like shortfalls or the shortcomings of the media and communication modalities that we have right now. On that note, I'm going to stop this tiny, tiny micropod that goes out to just a few hundred people each week. Thank you for listening and have a gentle day. Okay, bye.